Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR podcast brought to you by FanVice.com. Check out FanVice.com for free fantasy sports information. Baseball, golf, football right around the corner. There's also paywall content, but there's plenty of free stuff for you to check out. I am Pierce Dietrich at Race for the Prize on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing on iTunes to the FanVice podcast. Thank you for tweeting it out and all of that stuff. This week, we talk about the big one, the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte, the Memorial Day race. We just had the All-Star race. I'll talk about it for about 2 seconds because we do not know how much of that rules package is going to come into play moving forward. We do know for a fact in the Xfinity Series, we will see this at Pocono in less than 2 weeks. We know that we will see it again at Pocono. Well, they only race at Pocono once in the Xfinity Series, but they race twice. Or no, maybe only once in the Xfinity Series at Michigan as well. But we're going to see it at Michigan. We know we're going to see it at Pocono and Xfinity Series. The question is, where are we going to see it at in the Cup Series? And as I thought would happen, Michigan, New Hampshire, Pocono would be tweeting about it and already asking NASCAR for the package. And that pretty much happened. Pocono alluded to the fact that they already have it in the Xfinity Series. Would not be surprised to see it at least the second Pocono race this year for the Cup Series. We don't know. NASCAR says that they're going to have to test some things, and I don't know. If they find something that works, usually they just go all crazy, all in. We have no idea. Kyle Larson says they should use it at Kentucky and not Chicago, whereas Chicago themselves says, I mean, check out Chicago's Twitter account. They were less than 24 hours after the race, they're already begging NASCAR to allow them to use this rules package. I don't know if Chicago necessarily needs it. Chicago's got its own problems. It's an old worn-out track, which usually people like, but one of the problems with it being an old worn-out track with a high groove near the wall is it just turns into a really monotonous lap-turning affair, and that doesn't help attendance at all, and that doesn't help TV ratings at all. And as much as Chicago probably cares about being true to racing roots and being a true racetrack, which is something that, you know, being a northern track and a midwestern track, they kind of have to fight these southern tracks, these old school tracks, for a little bit of respect. So when they do something like this, it definitely hurts that respect that they've been fighting for years and years and years. But at the end of the day, it's more about the bottom line. And if you use this rules package, you're going to sell more tickets. That's it, folks. Forget about racing and what you like and what you don't like and whether it's right to slow down the leaders or if this is true racing or you're supposed to have a fast car. And what really matters, fantasy sports, NASCAR, is dollars. And there is no way that you're going to tell me you're going to sell more tickets with the same old racing style at Chicago, at Michigan, at Pocono. You probably rarely, if at all, watch the All-Star race. I know I'm in that category. I don't remember any All-Star races over the last 10 years. None of them are any good. They're all filled with gimmicks. This was the least gimmicky race we've ever seen in the All-Star race, and it was the best All-Star race that I can remember. Sure, there were some classics in the 90s, but this was a pretty good one. And you watched it, and you even watched the open race, which you probably don't like to do that one either. That's a big deal. That's a big deal for TV, sponsors, people buying tickets, general excitement, social media buzz. Whether you liked it or didn't like it, you were talking about it. And that's what Chicago desperately needs. That's what Michigan desperately needs. That's what Pocono desperately needs. These are struggling racetracks that could use this, along with gambling, I'm sure is going to help out as well. But have fun gambling on plate races at intermediate tracks. That should be fun. Let's shift the podcast to what we normally talk about, which is daily fantasy sports and preparing for the Coca-Cola 600. Charlotte. In the past, there are two races at Charlotte every season. We have the 600-mile race, which is very, very long. It is tough on an engine, especially when you consider there are three practice sessions during the week leading up to this race, and then a 600-mile race and qualifying. That is a lot on an engine. Different than the fall race, which is a 400-mile race, it's 500 miles, 500 miles, much shorter. Typically a day race now. It was a night race in the past. They shifted it to the day, but the fall race is always strange because it rains every year. We get almost no practice data to inform our picks. Strange race indeed. But the point that I'm trying to make is when you compare the data, maybe we're going to see some differences because there are just a lot less laps, a lot less hogs you would posit. I don't know if that's the case, and that's why I'm going to start off the podcast comparing our optimal lineups from the 2017 fall race to the 2017 spring race, and then do that with the 16 results as well. Because in theory, when you add 200 miles worth of laps, or 100 miles worth of laps, you're adding more hog points. That should mean we've got more drivers with fast lap points. We're going to have more drivers with laps led points. That should change the way we build our lineups. Not quite like at a short track, but pretty close. There are 400 laps here. We run 500 at Bristol, we run 500 at Martinsville, and those are racetracks where we know for a certainty that you're going to need three drivers that get hog points, and those hog points being fast laps led and laps led points if you want to win money at DraftKings. This is only 400, but that is more than our typical 267, which is what we see at a typical intermediate track. So a lot of points on the board. Will that determine our roster build? Maybe not. Let's look at the 2017 fall lineup that was optimal at Charlotte. Remember, this is less laps. You've got Kevin Harvick with 121 points, clearly a hog. Martin Truex Jr., 97 points, clearly a hog. Not really worried about the names of the drivers at this moment. Sure, you can make a note of them, but the drivers that have had success over the last 2 years at intermediate tracks should come as no surprise. So those are your two hogs. As we move down, we got Jimmy McMurray with 56 points, not a hog. Place differential, starting in the back. Eric Jones, 49 points, not a hog. Place differential, starting in the back. And those guys were 8,800 for McMurray, 79 for Jones. Suarez, 7,500. I believe he was starting in the back as well. And Jeffrey Earnhardt, as an absolute true punt, makes the optimal lineup with 21 fantasy points. Two hogs. That was the shorter race. The question is, when we go to the spring race, when we see more laps, theoretically, we're going to need more hogs. Martin Truex Jr. again. He is your optimal driver in the 2017 Coca-Cola 600 with 150 fantasy points. Clearly a hog. Kyle Busch, 91 fantasy points. Again, clearly a hog. Austin Dillon, 68.5. We got to look closer. Was he a hog? We know that he won the race, but I believe it might have been in more of a hog scrap situation. I'll look at that here in a second. Won the race on fuel mileage. Ryan Newman, 43, not a hog. AJ Allmendinger, 42, not a hog. And Daniel Suarez, 44.5, not a hog. No punts in this lineup. A lot of that was because Austin Dillon scored so many points. You had three drivers in the 7,000 range, and then you had AJ Allmendinger in the 6,700 range. This was benefited by the fuel mileage gain that was played at the end. Otherwise, you likely were going to see some punts sneak in here. If you take Dillon out and then you go see who would have scored more points, it changes things around. Let me look closer at that Austin Dillon finish and figure out how many fast laps and laps led points he actually earned. Was he a hog scraps? Was he just strictly finishing position and place differential? So we look at this and we find that Austin Dillon, 21 place differential points in that Coca-Cola 600 by playing the fuel game. And in terms of hog scraps, non-existent. And by him sliding in there, that did knock out a Denny Hamlin who had 14 hog scraps, a Jimmy Johnson who had 30 hog scraps. A lot of fast lap points there for Johnson. Kenseth, 6 most points, 13 fast laps. Kevin Harvick, 22 hog points. But these guys got negative place differential. and really couldn't compete with Dylan's finishing position points and his place differential points. And then, you know, Suarez, Newman, Allmendinger, all with 8 or more place differential points. Really unique situation because of the fuel run there at the end and gambling. I would not expect that to happen very often. I would more often think that in the Coca-Cola 600, the longer race, you're going to need the drivers with the Hulk points, which were there, but because we had several of those guys in the 7,000s, they just pointed their way in. Let's look closer, though, before I start making these generalizations. Let's see what happened in the fall race of 2016. Optimal lineup, Jimmy Johnson, 120 fantasy points. Then it drops down. You got Larson with 65, Kenseth 64, Newman 58, Almirola 51, and McDowell 38 as your punt. There were some big wrecks in this race as well, but clearly you only needed one hog, and there were less laps available. And with one guy gets 120 fantasy points at an intermediate track, that usually shuts the door on the other drivers. But let's look a little bit closer as we're looking at roster trends to see if that absolutely is the case. You got Johnson with, and we'll repeat these numbers again here in a second, 65 hog points, and that was pretty much it. You had Chase Elliott, that's right, Chase Elliott with a ton of hog points as well, but he got into a late race wreck. He ended up with 60 hog points for Elliott. So he had 2 hogs, but because of the way the race played out, you really only had 1 in the optimal item. Okay, that's the fall race. Let's go to the spring race where there's more laps, there are more points. Theory is you're going to need 3 hogs. But if you remember this race, and I'm sure that you do if you were playing Daily Fantasy, or if you just remember NASCAR, this is where Martin Truex Jr. scores 197 points. 197 points. He led 392 of the 400 laps. That means, you know, probably not a lot of hog points to go around. Jimmy Johnson did end up scoring 82 fantasy points. Off the top of my head, I believe he put up about 40 fast lap points. Again, you're going to need at least 2. We thought that maybe you would need 3 in this 600-mile race. It's hard to trust the recent track history because we look at last year and we see a fuel mileage race where place differential got involved and kind of shaked up the optimal lineup. We look back at 2016 Coca-Cola 600, and we've got one driver who just runs away with it. So we don't need 3 hogs in that race either. And Harvick, Allmendinger, Castle, and Biffle round out your lineup. Harvick gets some hog scraps for 66 fantasy points. That being said, if you've watched NASCAR this year, and you're saying to yourself, well, you know, if Martin Truex Jr. was able to just absolutely run away from the field in the Coca-Cola 600 race and score 197 points, that sounds awfully familiar, like a driver that we have seen this season already. The guy that won the last night race at an intermediate track by the name of Kevin Harvick, that just won the All-Star race, that just, he's won basically everything, folks. He's won everything. I know Kyle Busch had those weeks where he was making moves, and he had kind of fooled us into believing that maybe Kyle Busch was the best. But when we look closer at those races this year where Kyle Busch won at Bristol, Kevin Harvick started in the back of the field. We look at Richmond. Kevin Harvick starts 12th, starts making his way up through the front, but then a huge penalty sends him right back to the front at a track where it was really difficult to make moves. So Harvick never really got an opportunity to play up front. What was Kyle Busch's other win? Texas. Again, Kevin Harvick was there the whole time, and his pit crew just killed him time after time after time, which we saw again in the All-Star race. You can give Kevin Harvick about 1 penalty, maybe 2 penalties, or 2 mess-ups on pit road, and he'll be fine, which is pretty impressive, which makes you very comfortable rostering him, knowing that adversity is not much of an adversity to him. The only thing that's going to take Kevin Harvick out is Kevin Harvick, and we saw that at Fontana, but pretty much nowhere else. Do I think Kevin Harvick can lead 100 or score 200 fantasy points? I do, and I'm going to build my roster. It's going to start with Kevin Harvick no matter what. The guy is out of control this year. His car is too fast. He's too good. Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of Kevin Harvick, and I haven't even seen any practice. I haven't seen anything. Speaking of too fast, let's look at who actually is too fast at the intermediate tracks this year. Before we go into our Charlotte trends, let's look at current form. I talk about this on the podcast all the time, that I, as a daily fantasy NASCAR player, weigh current form over track history. I just do. There are some tracks where I will bump up track history. Bristol, Dover, Martinsville, just those are the ones off the top of my head. Talladega, Daytona, of course. But for the intermediate tracks, for the Charlotte, for the Kansas, for the Texases of the world, and even Kentucky's, and I know it's a unique intermediate track, still, if you're fast at the intermediate tracks, and that's the 1.5 miles, that's the 2 mile oval in Fontana, Michigan. If you're fast at these tracks, it's because your team has engineered a great car. And if they engineered a great car at Atlanta, Las Vegas, Fontana, Texas, and Kansas, then the odds are you are going to have a very well set up car for this Charlotte race. The best average running position this year, number one on your 2018 intermediate track average running position, Kyle Busch. Not a surprise, hasn't had a bad race at an intermediate track this year, has had a fast car at every intermediate track this year. 5th, 7th, 2nd, 4th, 6th, those are very good numbers. Remember, these are average running positions. It is very difficult to have an average running position of 1st. It is very difficult to have an average running position of 2nd. For him to have those numbers, pretty good. Remember, we're calculating every single lap of an entire race and then finding out where were you average. If you run 7th, for a couple laps, and you run 1st for a couple laps, it's going to average out to 3rd. And you are in the lead for a good while, but those 7th place positions are going to drag you down a little bit. A 10th place position is going to drag you down a good bit. So those are pretty good numbers. Not really surprised. I do want to make sure that we take note of Kyle Busch running 6th at Kansas. Wasn't very fast. We'll look closer at his fast laps and laps led. Just did not have a really good race car. And as we mentioned before, Kansas night race, good indicator of who's going to have speed at Charlotte, who is going to unload fast at Charlotte. Joey Logano, 86554. That's right, Joey Logano has the second best average running position. Talked about this leading into the Kansas race. This was mentioned in my DraftKings article. It was mentioned in the FanVice article. Pretty sure it was in the podcast. Joey Logano is not running fast laps. He may get you a couple Hulk scraps, but it's just not happening at intermediate tracks. But what he is doing is finishing inside the top five almost every single week, and he's running in the top five. His average running position, remember, that's a better indicator of what kind of car you have and who you are. 5th, 5th, 4th in the last 3 intermediate track races, he's going to run in the top five. If you've got one driver that absorbs all the Hulk points, then Joey Logano, with finishing position points and maybe just a couple Hulk scraps and just a couple place differential points, he will be in the optimal lineup. Pretty certain he was in the optimal lineup at Kansas. When you get one driver, a Kevin Harvick, that absorbs all of the Hulk points, then Joey Logano is a guy that you can count on. Kurt Busch is your 3rd best in terms of average running position. A little surprise there. And one of the reasons why we haven't heard Kevin Harvick's name yet, which I'm going to mention now, average running position in the 5 intermediate tracks, and I'm not including Dover, probably should include Dover, but hey, tough luck, is Kevin Harvick, 3rd at Atlanta, 2nd average running position at Las Vegas. Then we've got the 30th at Fontana. We're all familiar with what happened there. Our bank accounts as well, they know. Our bankers are very familiar of what happened at Fontana by now. 7th at Texas, and then again 2nd at Kansas, a race that he was in control of. If your average running position was 2nd, that pretty much means you were in control of that race. We don't see very often that a driver has an average running position of 2nd. Almost never do we have a driver with an average running position of 1st sometimes. 2nd's pretty rare. But when you see 2nd, you see Kyle Busch at Fontana. Although that really, he wasn't in control. He was pretty good, but 2nd's a pretty good number, is what I'm trying to say. We know about Kevin Harvick. I don't need to tell you about Kevin Harvick. Go overweight on Kevin Harvick. No problem with doing that this week. Brad Keselowski is 5th, and he's kind of like a little lesser version of Joey Logano this season, even though not really. Well, When I look at Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski kind of has defaulted his way into some hog points here and there. That could easily be Joey Logano as well. If I put those two cars head-to-head and said, who's a better driver, who has a faster car, I'm going to go with Joey Logano. Keselowski's played the strategy game and has been in the right place at the right time a couple times this year at Atlanta, at Dover. But when we go to the end of the race, Joey Logano is still there, and typically Brad Keselowski is sliding backwards. Still, Keselowski, pretty good. Blaney, very good as well. Kyle Larson, very good. Probably should be ranked higher, but he's got a 26th average running position at Texas. He was involved in... He wasn't collecting a wreck. He just went too fast, got a little out of the groove, was pushing it too hard, and wrecked. Same thing happened to Truex. We haven't mentioned him yet, but he's going to be the same thing. Larson's average running position this year at the intermediate tracks, 10th average running position, which ranks him 7th. Truex is an average running position of 11th. And his numbers are very similar. You look at Atlanta. Kyle Larson, average running position, 8. Truex, 8. And Truex had to start that race in the back. You look at Las Vegas. Kyle Larson, 5. Martin Truex Jr., 5. Fontana. Kyle Larson, 6th. Martin Truex Jr., 2nd. That was the race where Truex was completely in control of the race, but our old pal Kevin Harvick was not racing. We go to Texas. Kyle Larson, 26th. Martin Truex Jr., 29th. They almost had identical solo car wrecks, pushing it too hard, lost the wheel, went into the wall. Kansas, Kyle Larson, 5th. Martin Truex Jr., 9th. If of all those races, when I'm comparing Larson and Truex, and that's really what you're going to do this weekend, you're going to look at Harvick, and you probably already got Harvick in 140 of your 150 lineups. Don't do that. Come on now. But you already love Harvick. You're already pretty confident in Busch. Probably less Kyle Busch than you do Kevin Harvick. Then you go down to the next slot, and you're looking at Truex, and you're looking at Larson. And we look at those average running positions, and they're all pretty much identical. But the one thing for me that really sets these guys apart, well, there's two things, and we can go in a couple different directions and overanalyze this, and that's what we do when we're a week out. And I know some people say, well, you know, he records the podcast a week in advance, probably can't learn anything from that. That's really not the case. Sometimes, and a lot of the times, these assumptions that we make before practice, where we're actually just looking at the numbers and we're remembering what's happened, because when we get closer to the race and practice has happened and there's a lot more noise, we allow that noise and reports and practice laps to affect what we believed originally. And our original beliefs going into the week are based on current form mainly, and some track position. And we know for a fact that current form is the best indicator of predicting performance. But yet, we wait till the weekend, and then we read people's articles, and we read people's tweets, and we listen to the Slack chat, and we watch a live show here or there, and they're saying, this guy said this, and this tout said this, and then you've got so much noise. And the week happens, and then guess what? When the race plays out, the guy that we said was going to be fast on Sunday a week ahead was the guy that was fast. If you look at my daily fantasy sports report.com article, I've been writing that for 6 weeks now. 6 weeks, I write the article a week ahead. I write the article on Sunday a week ahead. Oh, he wrote that a week ahead. He didn't know what's going to happen. Folks, current form, we know, is the stat to trust. But yet, every week, we allow practice to play a big role in our decision. Yes, practice is important, and it can help us. But you have to dial it down. You have to dial down the noise. And then when you listen to touts, or you listen to me, then you have to figure out, well, when Pierce says this, or Doc says this, how much are they personally weighing practice in current form? How do you know another human being's weight scale? And then they say, well, they like this guy. But do you know exactly why they like that person? And are they inflating practice? Are they inflating track reports? Are they downgrading current form too much? But if you listen to the early week podcast, if you listen to any of the articles that are written earlier in the week, those are based on current form, which is the stat to trust. In 4 of the 6 weeks, or it might be 5 of the 7 weeks now, 5 of the 7 weeks that I've written the Daily Fantasy Report article, and it's free, I'm not sending people to other websites, stay with FanVice, but in 5 of those 7 articles, I have predicted the race winner, 5 times I've predicted the race winner a week ahead. And you probably could too. They weren't giant leaps of faith. But they weren't giant leaps of faith because when you make the picks a week ahead, there's not any noise. There aren't any reports. You make it based on current form and a little bit of track history. And you have a pretty good idea in your head of, well, of exactly your formula. When the weekend comes, the formula gets messed up. And then all of a sudden, think about your early week formula and your approach to the race. And then think of all the different variables you add on Friday and Saturday. You throw in 3 practices. You throw in starting position. You throw in what other people are saying. You throw in what touts are saying. You throw in the reports that you read. You've added 5 variables. Okay, what's your formula now? Where are you weighting things? How much is current form weighing in your formula? Early in the week, let's say current form was 70% of your process and 30% was track history. Well, you've thrown in all these other different categories of things that you're thinking about. So now your current form is probably only 45% of your end result. Just think about that, folks. He records his podcast a week and ahead. He doesn't know what he's... Just listen to the podcast. If I really thought that this podcast wasn't helpful recording it on Sunday, I wouldn't do it. But I've realized in the three, four years that I've been doing this that recording an early week podcast makes a lot of sense for me. It allows me to really solidify what really matters. And even if you're listening to this podcast Saturday morning, it still matters because this brings you back to your base, brings you back to forget the noise, current form, track history, trust the practice a little bit. But if Kyle Busch is routinely at the top, trust these numbers. Now back to what I wanted to say about Kyle Larson and about Martin Truex Jr. Kansas. Larson was very, very fast. He was faster than Truex. I know Truex almost won at the end, but that was through pitch strategy and good calls at the end. And Kyle Larson did not make good calls at the end of that race. The other thing that I want to point out, though, before we say, all right, Kyle Larson, lock him in. Good at Kansas. Good indicator. Kyle Larson runs the progressive banking at Kansas. He's up on the wall the entire time. That groove really came in during that night race and allowed him to fly. Charlotte does not have that. Charlotte will have a upper groove probably during the first half of the race. And it's not that the top groove will go away. Well, it will in this case because they have now added PJ1, which wasn't even announced. And I get it because of all the All-Star race hype and because there's a lot of rain and things got canceled and it was more about the restrictor plate and the upper groove and bottom groove stuff doesn't really matter because of the plate. But if you watch the truck race, they did slightly mention that, hey, there's PJ1 on the track. And if you just watch the race, you could see, hey, that looks pretty dark up there on the top. But some reason the media has not mentioned it. I am hoping for that. I'm hoping for my friends in the media this week that one of them may talk about this really big issue that Charlotte Motor Speedway. You know, when we go to other tracks, that's all they will talk about. Texas is running the Tire Dragon and applying PJ1. You hear that over and over and over. Maybe too much. Especially when, but it's worked this year. It has dramatically affected the racing. And we have seen some weird stuff because of PJ1 and a Tire Dragon. So the media going on and on about it, the fans, the drivers going on and on about it, it made sense. Last year, not the case at all. This year, yes, it's been a big deal. But we haven't heard anything about it at Charlotte this week. And it's there. It's on the track. They put it, they slightly mentioned it. Michael Waltrip's like, oh yeah, they put PJ1 up the track. All right, back to the race. Why did you put PJ1? That's a big deal. If there's an upper groove at Charlotte, now what we usually see at Charlotte, there will be an upper groove that's pretty fast. But it doesn't last. And it's not that it goes away. This is pre-PJ1. It's just that the bottom groove becomes faster. And you got to be at the bottom at the end of the race. It's just faster to run the bottom than it is at the top. It just gets better and better. Because as the track cools, you're going to get more grip. And you can get that bottom groove to stick. Early in the race, while the PJ1 is still there, I don't know if it's really going to help late in a 400 or 600 mile race. I doubt it. I doubt that you're going to be able to run the high groove 600 miles into this race. That hurts Kyle Larson. That's what I'm trying to say here with Kansas. Before you go overboard with Kyle Larson was fast at Kansas, that was a wall-banging track, which definitely is Kyle Larson's strong suit. The bottom groove probably is going to be the play. I mean, we remember watching Kevin Harvick last week winning the rigs, passing Martin Truex Jr. at the end, running that upper groove and just coasting right by him. Not going to have that this week. The bottom groove is going to be where it's at. You're going to have some speed in the top, but maybe you get in the middle groove and you can get something working. I'm going to probably say no. So easy with the Kyle Larson love. I just don't believe that the track's going to suit. We'll see. Now, maybe between now, because it is Sunday, this is an early week broadcast, there may be 5,000 pounds that they pour of PJ1 on the track. The other problem with that is it's going to rain every single day for the next, I think, 8-9 days. Who knows how much of that stuff's going to get washed off. It's not supposed to wash off. We've talked about this. They've told me about this several times in the Slack chat, that it is water hydrophobic, so water does not affect it. I believe you have to use grease to remove it from the track, something along those lines. I don't know. Not a scientist. Let's look at a little bit more of these average running positions, intermediate tracks. Blaney Larson Jones, a guy that we've liked at intermediate tracks. Boyer, he's been good. Maybe been cheating a little bit. Hamlin's been all right. Almirola's been okay, but you need positive place differential from Alma, Alma, Rolla. Elliott, McMurray, not good. Not good year for McMurray. I have a hard time rostering him. He's not screwing up anymore. He's not making huge mistakes, but he's not good either. That's the weird thing. We watched early in the season, and we expected him to be his normal top 15 self. That hasn't happened this year. And we didn't think we were seeing the top 15s because he was just making mistakes and wrecking. Well, the wrecks, the pit road mistakes, those are all gone, and he is still not running inside the top 15. The rest of these guys, I don't know if they're worth mentioning. You kind of just throw them all into the same category. You don't know what you're going to get from one week to the next with a Paul Menard, with a Newman. Newman probably is a little bit better. Newman's been around a top 15 driver, but Menard, Dylan has been an absolute mess. William Byron, you do not know what. He shows signs of brilliance, and then he shows signs of barely being alive when his car gets destroyed because he takes two tires. Alex Bowman, up and down. He kind of yo-yos throughout the race. Buescher has been better. AJ Allmendinger's teammate also been halfway decent in the last couple races at Dover, at Kansas. May need to keep our eyes on AJ Allmendinger. Reagan McDowell both have been fine. Bubba, we know the story with Bubba, but we're going to need a lot of cautions and wrecks just to get that car going. They just don't have the car. Casey Kane's been, Suarez has been kind of disappointing. Probably more disappointing than anything. But we know what the deal is with Suarez. I mean, he was good at Dover, but they cheated, apparently. Wrecked at Texas. 23rd average running position at Kansas. That was because he got bad pit road. But that's the thing with Suarez. He has had pit road issues all season and wrecks all season. And when he doesn't, he's a top 10 car. But you can't count on him. It is hard to roster him. Very, very hard. And the one time that he did have a good race, he also cheated. So, hard to say. All right, we're going to stick with current form. We're going to look at fast laps and just kind of go through who's been fast at the intermediate tracks. And in this one, I will count Dover. Fast laps, we will go in reverse. Kansas, you had three hogs in terms of fast lap points. Kevin Harvick with 36, Kyle Larson with 24, and Ryan Blaney with 20. Don't forget, Ryan Blaney was running up near the front for most of that race. He led a bunch of laps in that race before he got run down, I think in stage one. And then he got frustrated and wrecked himself at the end of the race, blowing up some lineups. It's not new. We've talked about Blaney before. I've made sure to mention this in articles and in previous podcasts with Ryan Blaney, that at that Texas race, he may have had something for Kevin Harvick and he may have had something for Kyle Busch. But remember, he got busted for an uncontrolled wheel tire violation, whereas they let Kevin Harvick go on one of those. Interesting. Strange. But anyway, they busted Ryan Blaney. He may have had something there. He ends up settling for top five. He has had a fast car. He's always fast at Kansas. He's always fast at Kansas every single year. Every single race. I mean, Kansas is where he made his Sprint Cup debut a couple years ago. And then last year from the front row ends up being, scores second most fantasy points. And then he starts last in the fall race and still scores second most fantasy points. And then again, 20 fast lap points at Kansas. strange thing is, we haven't seen him. He should be able to translate this into the Charlotte Knight race. We'll see, though. Dover, it was all about Kevin Harvick. 57 fast lap points, but then we had five drivers in the teens in terms of fast lap points, and you've got 400 laps at Dover. You're going to get hog scraps, very similar to what we might see at Charlotte, but I don't know if you're going to see the fast lap scraps rapping, rapper the rapper, being spread around that way. But anyway, you got Kyle Busch with 11, Truex 11, Bowyer 13, Keselowski 14, and Alex Bowman 14. And if those names sound familiar, those are all drivers that led laps during that race. Kyle Busch didn't lead any laps, and Kyle Busch had that issue. But 11 fast laps for Kyle Busch, probably not much of a surprise. But Truex was right near the front. We know Bowyer led laps before the rain and a little bit after the rain. Keselowski kind of defaulted to some laps led early in the race. And then Alex Bowman, I believe, played some games, if I remember correctly, in the first stage. So there's that. That's your fast lap recap, Dover. Go to Richmond, and at Richmond, we've got them kind of spread out, and the most fast lap points is going to be Ricky Stenhouse Jr. on my sheet. Maybe there's somebody else. No. And that's because he was constantly on a different tire strategy, playing really stupid games. You'll remember he was a lap down and throwing on tires, and so I wouldn't read too much into that. He had new tires. Everyone else had old tires. Yeah, Kurt Busch, who led laps for a certain point of time. He got 14 fast laps. Martin Truex Jr., 14 fast laps. Very fast in stage two and stage three. Ends up blowing the race at the very end because of just terrible pit road work. Kevin Harvick with 14 fast laps, and he was in traffic the entire race. And then Kyle Busch, 18 fast laps, your race winner. Led at the end and led during parts of the race. Not a lot of surprises there. Your typical fast cars. We go to Bristol. We don't need to care about Bristol. Let's go to Texas. 41 fast lap points for Kevin Harvick. That's a lot. And then 35 for Kyle Busch. And that's about it. Kurt Busch had 14. Eric Almirola with... No, Kurt Busch had 14. But other than that, you had two guys pretty much in control of the entire race. We go to Fontana. 35 fast lap points for Truex. 13 for Kyle Busch, and then that's pretty much where we shut the door there. Remember Kevin Harvick wrecks. Go back to Las Vegas, 32 for Harvick, 11 for Kyle Busch, and then 12 for Martin Truex Jr., and that's pretty much what you have there. Go to Atlanta, and that's 39 for Harvick, 12 for Busch, 23 for Ryan Newman. He got out there, ran some fast laps at the very beginning, and I think he got on a different tire strategy before he blew his tire. Brett Keselowski with 14 when he kind of led those laps when everyone else was, he just got on a different pit strategy. But really, when I read through the names, you probably should have seen Harvick's fast. Yeah, thanks. Didn't need a podcast to know that. Kyle Busch is fast. Didn't need a podcast to know that one either. Truex has been right there, but he's clearly not in Harvick and Busch's ballpark. Larson, did not read Larson a lot, but I did read Larson recently at Kansas. That's a good sign, but if we're looking through the whole season, he has not had an elite car at intermediate tracks. Just has not. Blaney, fast at Kansas. Is that a Kansas thing? We don't know. Keselowski has been pretty good at scrapping. He has been very consistent at scrapping. It's just the way it is. Scrapping and scraping, taking what he can get. You can't rule him out. He's been doing this for a while. I never feel comfortable with that pick, but you'll notice that I read Krasowski a lot more than I read Logano, and that's what we mentioned earlier. Logano gets the finishing position and has the better average running position, but it just does not scrape them fast lap points. Let's look at laps led, and you're going to just see the same names here. We'll go to Kansas, 20 for Harvick, 14 for Blaney, and 25 for Larson. Very correlated with the fast lap points. Kevin Harvick, 50 at Dover, 27 for Keselowski, and 10 for Clint Bowyer. Really, it was just if Kevin Harvick didn't have the greatest pit road, then other people inherited the lead. That's just the way it worked. Kevin Harvick at Texas, 22. Kyle Busch, 29. What if Kevin Harvick doesn't have mistakes on pit road? What do those numbers look like? Something to think about. Fontana, 31 for Truex, 16 for Kyle Busch. What if Kevin Harvick doesn't wreck himself into a wall? What do those numbers look like? I guarantee that Martin Truex Jr. does not lead the 31 lap sled points. Or score 31 lap sled points. Las Vegas, 54 lap sled points for Kevin Harvick. pretty much nothing for anybody else. Atlanta, 45 for Kevin Harvick. And then you got Kurt Busch with 13 and Brad Keselowski with 10, simply getting points when Kevin Harvick was dealing with pit gun issues. It's Kevin Harvick's world. Kyle Busch is the second in command. If I had to pick number three, I'm probably going to give the nudge to Martin Truex Jr. because of past history in this Charlotte night race and even in last fall's Charlotte race, even though the Fords are clearly faster than the Toyotas, but it's Harvick, it's Busch, it's Truex, and then I got Larson right there. Where would I go next? I'm going to go Blaney just because of the pure speed. And one of the things that they have talked about recently is that because Blaney has been showing up with pure speed every single week, that a lot of these, or not a lot, but Keselowski and Logano are going with Blaney's setup. And that would be my next guy is Keselowski and Logano. It depends on which way you want to go. Keselowski more likely to get you some scraping and scrapping in points. Logano is more than likely to have a better average running position. Price matters when I'm selecting two of them. And the way that it's been going, Logano has been cheaper. So I would probably lean Logano based on price. And with the hope that maybe he can get some fast laps and laps led. Practice probably will help break the tie between the two. From there, I don't really see anyone as an early week hog. Let's look at some trends at Charlotte. As we look at the trends, of course, we want to familiarize ourselves with the names of the drivers that have driven well, but you got to be careful, as always. We're looking at a 2017 fall race. A lot of things have developed since then. Again, not to beat the dead horse. Current form, probably your best indicator. But when we look at it, sure, trust some of these names. The bigger thing that I'm looking for are trends in how to construct your lineup, on how many expensive hogs to slide into your lineup, maybe where to save, what was the typical format of a value play, of a punt. Can we look at practice? Some of that stuff. So if we look at the 2017 fall race, your points were Harvick and Truex. They're your hogs. You remember this is the point of the season last year where Harvick just light switch, turned it on, and we kind of found out that probably last year the different Fords were running all kinds of different setups every single week, playing around, trying to really just figure out their car. And by the time the playoffs rolled around and it really mattered, they had a decent idea of, all right, this is what's going to work. At least that's what it looks like. No one's ever come out clearly and said that. They said that they experimented every week, but they never really gave us all that information. We could see that Kevin Harvick struggled just about everywhere. It was just an okay car. But then when the playoffs came, he was fast. So, and here he was with over 80 hog points. Truex with over 40 hog points. They both have pretty good days there. Jimmy Johnson gets it by place differential points. He started 25th, finished 7th. Remember, that's the old Chevy too, so don't say, oh, Jimmy Johnson's good here. Well, he is. He's absolutely amazing at Charlotte, but let's be careful with that because Jimmy Johnson has been amazing everywhere. We ran into this with Jeff Gordon at the end of his career. We ran into this with Tony Stewart at the end of his career. These guys have won everywhere during the heights of their success. So as their careers enter the twilight, you look at track history and you go to a place like Dover a couple weeks ago. Jimmy Johnson's got 11 wins at this track. He's great here. He was great here. But those wins, although there was one last year, it wasn't really a dominant performance. They squeaked it out. Just like he squeaked out a win at Bristol. Just like he squeaked out a win at Texas. Another place where I believe he has 7 or 8 Texas wins. And he won at Texas in 2017. It was not a race where he was the best car. He played the strategy perfectly. And that's how Jimmy Johnson wins races. And yes, Jimmy Johnson, I think he's had 7 or 8 Charlotte wins. And we're going to Charlotte. And he's scored a lot of fast laps recently, but he's in a completely different car this year, and he's on the decline, and I would not really be all that crazy about rostering Jimmy Johnson. Every sign in the world, don't do it. Don't. I don't want to go into another bicycle rant. Don't make me do it. Did you watch the pre-race, and the guy gets married? And I'm watching that, and like, oh, it's Jimmy Johnson's friend just got married. And I'm thinking to myself, the guy wasn't a pit crew member. Who is this friend of Jimmy Johnson's? And then it clicked on my head before they even cut to it. I'm like, man, I bet that's one of his bicycle goons. And they cut to the picture of the bicycle goon kissing his bicycle goon wife. Get out of my life, damn bike life people. Get out. I don't want you here anymore. I don't want this to be a story anymore. I don't want this to come up on the podcast anymore. Two tires, Ryan Newman. You know, he didn't mention Ryan Newman. You see Ryan Newman get dumped by Kyle Larson on the last lap. That's probably not just a one-off. Now, I know it's payback. Newman did it to Larson at Bristol. We've talked about that on here before. And you see in that last lap, Larson dumped Newman in the All-Stars. It didn't matter for Newman. He was not going to win it. But I know Newman, a guy that definitely holds a grudge. Even though it's even now, we should be even. I don't think it is. When I'm rostering Larson this week, I am in the back of my mind going to worry about Ryan Newman getting payback, even though we're even. There shouldn't be payback when you wreck a guy and then he wrecks you. It should be boom, done. I think in Newman's mind that he never wrecked. Well, remember, he's like, he came down in front of me. He drove down in front of me. Newman, he drove down in front of you. You were a lap down, and you drove into him at Bristol. All right. Enough. Give Newman two tires, Newman, bicycles. There's a long list of things on this podcast that they're trigger words, folks. I try to keep this podcast a safe space, but it's impossible to do. Chase Elliott had a good race last fall, and he's been good in the fall Charlotte races. But again, the Hendrick car is a different beast. Kyle Larson, 20 fast lap points. That is encouraging coming into this race. Maybe he did work a high groove, but then again, that's a day race. And you get into a night race, we'll look at last year's night race and see if Larson was able to run some fast laps. But you know, if we see a small portion of fast laps from Kyle Larson, that's going to lead me to believe that, yeah, he probably ran those early in the night. And as the track cooled down, that bottom groove came in, maybe that's when his ability to run fast laps disappeared. Denny Hamlin with 20 hog points starting first. Really no cheap drivers here in this fall race. McMurray with 13 place differential points, but he wasn't cheap. Eric Jones, 21 place differential points. He was chalk starting towards the back. Jones started the race 38th. Yeah, he was chalk in that race. Everyone was plugging him in. And then you had Suarez with kind of an interesting play starting 14th, finishing 6th. His average running position was 14th, though. Not really a smart play, but sometimes they just work out. And then Ryan Blaney, starting 15th, finishing 8th to round out your top 10. So, 10 cautions in this race, 24 cars on the lead lap. That's a lot of cautions. That's a lot of cars on the lead lap for an intermediate track. Sub 8K drivers, Jones and Suarez, top 10. You had 4 started in the real life top 10, had a top 10 DFS day, 9 finished in the top 10. No surprise there. You need top 10s with your fantasy picks. Your punts don't have to be top 10s. If you go double punt, that's okay. They don't need to top 10. I don't think that this will be a double punt week. Your one punt, not going to need to be in a top 10. 4 of your cars absolutely need to finish with the top 10. Maybe your fifth guy can squeak in there from 10th to 15th, but when you're building your lineups and you're thinking to yourself, can this guy get into the top 15? Now, if you go a 6K driver and you're not punting, you're probably not going to need that guy in the top 10 either, but you probably will need them somewhere in the top 20. That's just what I'm thinking right here. 2 punts, DiBenedetto drove from 29th to 23rd. LaJoy LeChois drove from 39th to 28th. Your hogs, we already mentioned those. Harvick, Truex, and then distant Larson and Hamlin. We look at practice speeds, and we find out that we only had one practice in the Charlotte fall race because it rains every year. Yeah, so hard to look at these practice times. I'm not going to. The date is here. If you want to check out the Fantasy NASCAR podcast script, tinyurl.com/DFS NASCAR folder. That's tinyurl.com/DFS NASCAR folder. My apologies if you're listening to this podcast on the 2x speed because this is going way too fast. Slow it down. Let's look at the 2017 Coca-Cola 600, the Memorial Day race. Most points for the second year in a row at the Coca-Cola 600. Martin Truex Jr., 148 points. Probably going to have to bump him up a little bit more. I know I've got Harvick as numero uno big dog. And I still like Kyle Busch because Kyle Busch scored the second most fantasy points in the 2017 Coca-Cola 600 with 91 fantasy points. But Truex definitely climbing a couple rungs above Kyle Larson at this point, and much closer. He's in the ballpark. You know, Kevin Harvick's batting, Kyle Busch is pitching, and probably not in the nosebleeds is where Martin Truex is sitting. I got him like in the club seats, not quite on field level. He's not down on the third baseline. He's not in the nosebleeds. He's kind of in that middle tier. If you went to the old Riverfront Stadium, they were the yellow seats. You know what I'm talking about? Riverfront Synergy Field. Remember it called Synergy? The yellow, right in the middle. Austin Dillon, we already talked about that. Hamlin with 12 hog points, 54 points total. Not going to be an optimal lineup at his price. Jimmy Johnson, interesting enough, 30. He's had a lot of hog points in the last Charlotte races. But, it's a different car, folks. Be careful with that track history. And if you don't believe me, like, yeah, but he's so good at Charlotte. Okay, well, look at that Texas race. I know. You're going to say, well, the Texas race was really cool. It had really crazy temperature, and there was only one groove in it. I don't know if I can trust it. Yeah, I hear you. But you know he hasn't been good at intermediate tracks this year. You know it. Look at Dover. It's a great track for him. We've seen him run well at Bristol. We've seen him run well at Dover. And he went from the back to the front. But he's not leading laps. There is a glass ceiling for Jimmy Johnson in his golden years. He can have good races. And we saw this with Gordon. And we saw this with Tony Stewart. Occasionally he breaks through, very rarely, and has that good day. But it's not, it's a win, but it's not leading laps. It's not running all the fast laps. The ceiling, the walls are closing in. You're in the trash compactor in Star Wars. It's coming, Jimmy. It's happening. Or not. I don't know. I could be wrong. But early week, I'm saying no Jimmy Johnson. Now, watch. Just watch. Maybe you're saying the same thing. You're writing down your paper, no Jimmy Johnson. And then watch us Friday practice and Saturday noise rolls out there. Like, oh, man, Jimmy's starting 23rd. I think I'm going to get on this guy. He's been good here in the past, even though a week before, you know it's going to happen. Jimmy Johnson's going to start 23rd, 24th. Probably not even going to make an attempt in the second qualifying round. He's going to give you some BS line like, well, we didn't even think we could make it into the next round. Well, that's not a good sign right there. If you don't even think you can qualify for the final round, then what the hell are you even doing out there? Why are you racing if, well, we don't think we're good enough? Well, then get better. At least try. Anyway, Sunday's going to roll around. He's going to start 23rd. You're like, oh, man, you know, he was good here in the past. I think he can get a top five. Although, a week before, you're saying, who cares how good he was in the past? This guy's washed up. Just wait. So I'm telling you that this early week podcast, kind of important. It makes sense. Current form says no to Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson. Matt Kenseth, don't care about him. Kevin Harvick, 22 hog points last spring in the Coca-Cola 600. That's cool. That's a boost. Would have scored more place differential points, but it got -7 place differential points. From there, we move down. Let's look at some of these trends. Cautions, 9. That's a good amount. But when you have such a long race, even 9 cautions cannot help the lap turners. 11 or 17 lead lap finish. It's not bad. Sub 8K drivers in the top 10. Dillon and Suarez again. Suarez, not bad. If we get Suarez around the 7K price tag, we got to do the Suarez thing again. Well, you know the story of Suarez. Can he get you a top 10 if he doesn't screw up? Yes. Will he blow your lineups up if he screws up? Yes. That's it. That's all that matters. Can we predict whether they will get it right or not? No, we can't. We got a good week with Suarez on the All-Star race, but that one doesn't count because everyone was plugging in the guys in the back. We cannot pretend that, yeah, we nailed Suarez at the All-Star race. We figured it out. Well, first of all, no one had any idea that he was going to run all the way up there. You were happy with the top 10, so shut up. I was happy with the top 10. No one believed that he was that fast or that he could get all the way up there. And let's not pretend that, yep, we knew it. We knew to pick him this week. We picked him because he was in the back. You also had lineups with Alex Bowman. Don't tell me you didn't. You also had some Kasey Kahne. We had all the guys in the back. That doesn't count. That doesn't count as a week we successfully figured out Daniel Suarez. It doesn't happen. The one time that someone successfully figured out Daniel Suarez in the Slack chat was also the week that he cheated. So don't tell me that you know what's going to happen with this guy, because we don't. We just don't. If you do, honestly, let me know. Send us some DMs, get in the Slack chat and say, no, we seriously know that they're not going to mess up. That would help a lot. That's a lot of money we could win if we could figure this one out. $75,000, it's a pretty good amount of money. Top 10, 5 cars started inside the top 10, 8 finished there. And that might have to do with the fuel mileage strategy here in the Coca-Cola 600. Two punts, McDowell 21st to 19th, Reagan 28th to 23rd. And that's kind of the part, like McDowell 21 to 19. That is a scary, scary play. But you didn't need it because of the way things shaped out. But if you didn't see the fuel mileage thing work this way, getting McDowell with an average running position of 21 through the whole race, yeah, you know, definitely clinching the butt making that pick. Truex, Hogg, Bush, Hogg, Jimmy Johnson, Hogg. I believe in Truex. I believe in Bush. Throw Harvick in there as well with 20 Hogg points. But Jimmy Johnson, going to be hard to trust him, even with track history. Let's look at some of this practice data and see if it lines up. Truex started 6th and in practice 3, not very fast, but he was very fast in practice 2. Very, very fast. Who knows what was going on there. Kyle Busch, fast in practice 2, just okay in practice 3. May have been the time of practice too. These guys may have known something. I would have liked to. I can't look at every single lap right now, but I would like to have looked at it. Well, I can this year, but I couldn't then. Austin Dillon. You look at his practice, you'd say probably a 10th place car. Let's look at his average running position. It was 10th place. And that's a good thing that I like to do is just your long run speed, you kind of average it out. You look at where you run, and you kind of factor where everybody else is, and you just get an idea of where they should run throughout the race. That's where Austin Dillon ran. We look at Denny Hamlin. I would say he's probably an 8th place car. Average running position, 10th. Okay, that lined up pretty well. Jimmy Johnson, I look at where he ran. I would say his average running position is probably 6th. Average running position, 5th. Boom. It's not that hard, folks. You look at the, I look at the single lap runs. I look at the average running position. I kind of get a generalization of a finding an in-between mark and saying, all right, that's about where you could run. Let's look at Matt Kenseth. I see a 6.15, 6.32, but it's Matt Kenseth. I'm going to say about average running position 6th. Average running position of 4th. Kevin Harvick. 5.9, 28. So for some reason, these guys are all running really slow in the short run in practice 3. Maybe something was up with practice 3. I don't think it matters that much. I'm going to put him around, I don't know, 5th. Average running position, 8th. Yeah, not far off again. That's all you got to do, folks. When you look at these practice speeds, that's what I do. And for the most part, it works, unless somebody gets in a wreck or something big happens. And, you know, I'm obviously weighing in the back of my head. So just by going through these leagues, I mean, look at Daniel Suarez. I would say his average running position is probably 11th or 12th. Average running position, 14th. I look at Dale Earnhardt Jr., I would say about 15th, 13th. Looking at Newman's practice, 12, 12, 6, 13, I would say about 12th. Average running position for Ryan Newman, 14th. AJ, I already looked at him, but y'all remember we'll get there. Eric Jones, 1, 2, 5. Didn't make any long runs, though. Very, very fast, but this is last year. I don't think Eric Jones, I would say 11th at best. Average runs, 11th. Look at that, folks. I'm not cheating here. I'm just looking at the numbers in practice and saying where they would go. Paul Menard, 19, 27, 26, 18 on the long run. 19, 27, 20, he's probably 21st. Average running position, 18th. Missed it, but close. Buescher, 25, 28, 22. All right, folks, what do you think? 25, 28, 22. Those are all single lap runs because he never makes long runs. I would say 24th is his average running position. 20th. A little off there. McMurray, 10, 23, 8 on the long, 24 short, 1 on the long run, but that was in practice 3, which was kind of meaningless. I'm going to say 19th average running position, 11th. I just completely missed on that. Should trust it a little bit more. Bane, this is a fun game or is this annoying to you? I'll let you play this one. Right, so Trevor Bane. See, it gets kind of tougher as you get to these guys that run around the 20s and the teens. A lot of things can happen in the race that change their average running position. A lot of issues with other cars will push them up or push them down. I'll do one more. Trevor Bane, 21st in practice 1, 5th in practice 2, no long run, 23rd in practice 3, 23 on the long. So you got 21, 5, 23, 23. I'm going to say 17. Hey, yo, 17 is his average running position. I'm not cheating, folks. That's how you do it. That's how it's done, kids. Did we learn anything right there? Yeah, practice. Practice speeds matter, and all the practice laps matter. I like practice three, but there, clearly, something was up with practice three. You couldn't trust it, so he had to get a general idea of where other cars were running in all the practices. And there's other ways that you can kind of do that in your head as well. We're at the hour mark, and I haven't even talked about Xfinity. Let's look at this 2000. I didn't even look at the 2016 races. I'm going to go really fast with this, if you don't mind. 2016 fall race, it was a wreck fest. You had two sub-8K drivers in the top 10, Newman and Almirola. And two cars started inside top 10, eight cars finished inside top 10. I don't know if you can trust this as much because it was a wreck fest. And one of the ways that you absolutely know that the fall race was a wreck fest is you had five punts come through: McDowell, Castle, Regan Smith, Michael Annette, David Reagan. That was a wreck fest. Probably don't want to look at that race that much. And you can't even look at the practice speeds because it rained all weekend. I was there, drowning in it. Go back to 2016 Coca-Cola 600. That's where Truex scores 197 points. Jimmy Johnson with 82 points. He gets 36 fast lap points. Kevin Harvick, 18.5 fast lap points. Harvick's been fast every year at the Coke race. Even last year when his team was slightly struggling. Struggling. So Harvick definitely on top of my board this week. Look at Keselowski, even got 12 scrap points in that race a couple years ago where Truex just went ham. We look at the, you know, another thing was, man, there was four cautions in that entire race. 15 cars on the lead lap. A snooze if there ever was one. Sub-8K drivers in the top 10, a goose egg. 2016, top 10, two top 10 DFS, five started there, seven finished there, no punts. You basically had one hog with Truex, but you can throw Johnson in there with 36 points as well. And Truex was blazing fast throughout practice. It was a no-brainer. Jimmy Johnson was blazing fast in practice. It was a no-brainer. Let me read you Jimmy Johnson's speeds. Second short run on practice two, second in long run practice two, third on short run practice three, second on long run practice three. So there was Truex and there was Johnson. They were the fastest in practice. And guess who was the fastest in the race? It was both those guys. It was both of those guys. Number three, looking at these numbers, if I said who was the third fastest in practice, probably would have said Kurt Busch, but you probably weren't going to slam him in your lamps. But Kevin Harvick was pretty fast as well. Keselowski showed some long run speed in practice three. I think you can trust the practice speed. That's as far as I'm going to go with the Charlotte trends. We're already at the hour mark. I don't need to spend all day recording a podcast. There will be an Xfinity race, and this Xfinity race will feature the Cup drivers. And if you've been paying attention this year, you pretty much know what we do when the Cup drivers are in the race. You just jam them in, folks. There's nothing much more to it. You're going to play the Cup drivers. They have crushed every single race that they are in. You kind of need to change your philosophy. We had to change it up a little bit recently when we had the non-Cup drivers. We treated Bell better. We treated Allgaier better. We liked Sadler more. But those guys aren't going to all be able to score points. The one Cup driver is going to run away with it, and he's going to suck up your salary, and you're going to need him, and you're not going to be able to afford multiple top-tier Xfinity level drivers. You just can't do it. You got to go back to our original builds at Fontana where you had to do a little bit of savings, get guys that could finish well, and get you some place differential points, because all the hog points are going to the 22 Penske car. The 18 JGR car has gotten a lot better. And if Kyle Busch is in this race, then I'm pretty sure I can believe in it, but I want to see how it runs in practice. I don't know if Kyle Busch is going to be in that car, but it has improved as the season has progressed. Or maybe it hasn't, because if we watch the ascent of the 18 car under Noah Gragson and Ryan Preece, that was also in races where we didn't have another Cup driver. If we go back to the beginning of the season and we put the 18 car out there and it's the only Cup car, then of course Kyle Busch wins all of his races. But if you put Joey Logano, you put Ryan Blaney, you put Brad Keselowski in the 22 Penske, or is it the 12 Penske car? I can't remember. Whatever, the Penske car that goes out there that Austin Cindric's been driving. You put a Cup driver in that, then that car probably going to beat Kyle Busch. And it probably will beat Kyle Busch this weekend, but let's see. It looks like the 18 car in the Xfinity Series has gotten better. It looks like it. Again, it's hard to draw a real comparison because there hasn't been any Cup drivers in the field. We'll wait until see. But if I'm making a decision now, I would much rather roster the Penske car, depending on who's in it. But if it's Blaney, if it's Logano, if it's Keselowski, I don't know who else would get in that car. If Menard were to get in that car, no, I wouldn't want him. But if those other three are in there, then absolutely I will take those guys in this race above Kyle Busch. You're not going to be able to roster them both. We've seen how DraftKings has set up the salaries where these guys are $14,000, $13,000. You just cannot take them both. You're not going to get the best point per dollar bill unless for some reason there's some really ridiculously cheap punts. I don't see that. I don't believe we will have that. You can't roster them both, but you need one of them. If you want to go 50-50 and build half of your lineups with Kyle Busch and the half your lineups with the other Penske car, that's fine as well. That seems like a pretty safe strategy. A lot of times I rather go overweight on one of them so that I have a better coverage on all my other picks. That's just the way that I tend to lean. That's up to you. Who should we use to fill out the rest of those picks? Well, we'll look at average running position to get a good idea. And if you just look at average running position this year, hold on a second. Let's just real quickly look back at who was fast in the last couple races. Allgaier, almost 50 hog points. Reddick, 12 hog points. Bell, only 6 hog points. What the hell happened to Bell in that race? Oh, that's right, he started in the very back. That will do. He started 34th. Reddick started 33rd. Sadler with 22 hog points. You will probably only be able to roster one of those guys. And maybe if Bell is really fast, and maybe if Bell has starting position, you can get hog scraps, which we've seen him do a couple times in races this year. We've also seen Allgaier pull that off as well. But typically, the popular play is going to be which of them gets place differential, because that's more of a guaranteed going into the race. When we see one of them starting 15th, we know this place differential, there's a high probability of those points happening. We don't know if fast lap points are going to seep over into the Xfinity drivers when you've got a Cup driver that is so, so fast. I mean, for example, we go to the Fontana race and you look and say, all right, well, did some of those points spill over? And you look at fast laps and laps led points, and Logano just absolutely absorbs. If there is a total 93 points and 57.25, so over half of the points went to him. So then you've got 30%, 35% of the points go to the other drivers, and you spread that throughout the other drivers. You did get Tyler Reddick with 9 fast lap points, but you didn't know that was going to happen. And you were lucky to get him because he also had a starting position of 16th, went to 4th, had a wrecking loose race car the entire day, but still was able to pull it off. But you just don't know that how the race is going to play out. We go to Texas a couple weeks later, and Ryan Blaney ends up with 60 hog points. How many hog points were available? 125. So half of them go to him. And then you think, well, where is the rest are going to be sprinkled? Bell got some of them. Daniel Hemric got some of them. Ryan Preece got some of them. End of the day, though, the guy that scores the most points out of that group, and they were all priced similar. I think Preece was pretty cheap in that race. But if you look at Hemric and Bell, the guy that scores more points is the guy that got more place differential points. So clearly, Daniel Hemric starting 35th, gonna score some points in that race. Even with Bell starting 18th, though, he scores a lot of points. Place differential seems to be the differentiator there. Let's go back to even further. Let's look at the Las Vegas race. Again, Kyle Larson runs away with this race. He scores 68 hog points. And then you got Ryan Blaney as your next guy with 24 hog points. And there were only 133, so what, about 75% of the hog points went to those guys. And that's probably what we're going to see if we see two top-tier hogs in this race. I want to look at that Fontana race and see. Logano was really the only Cup driver that was worth a hoot. I mean, I mentioned Ryan Preece. He was in that 18 car. We didn't have a Kyle Busch in that. You had Joey Logano and Scrubs. We look at that Texas race, and I believe it's Ryan Blaney and Scrubs. And it is. We don't have Kyle Busch in this race that I'm aware of. Yeah, again, if you got two Cup drivers, one's going to take them all. The other one's going to get some of them. If you pick the right one, you don't need the other guy. And then there's really not going to be scraps for the rest. Now, if we get one cup driver, then yeah, you're going to have some scraps that go to guys and help them out. It really just depends on how many of these cup guys get into the race. And there's going to be plenty of cup guys. This is the Charlotte race. This is their home race. It's really easy for them to do. They just sit at their house all day. They're not even probably in a camper. I would be surprised if we didn't get a handful of upper tier cup drivers in this Charlotte race. So build wise, your Hemrick's, your Bells, your Elliott Sadler's, I don't see you getting more than one of them. Maybe you can get two in your lineup, but you're going to have a cup driver, one to two top tier drivers, and I'm leaning towards place differential. If there's only one cup driver, then sure, you can get some hog scraps. But the place differential is more of a guarantee. It's safer. It's predictable. That's the way I would go. And maybe you can get some scraps on top of that. Because if you take a guy who you're going with the scrap option, and he does get those, but he can't get place differential, who's to say that another Xfinity driver doesn't get both? Gets some place differential points, gets some fast lap points here and there. And that guy ends up scoring more. And then again, it comes down to salary. It comes down to a point per dollar and who you can fit in your lineup. We got to see a lot of things on Saturday morning and see how things shake up. As far as who's good this year, we might as well run through real quick. I'll just look at Dover real quick. And I felt like Dover was a pretty typical race. And we look at the finishes. Allgaier ends up winning the race, although he was probably cheating. He's clearly your top three car. Tyler Reddick, I would say he's a top five car. Christopher Bell is probably the best car. Elliott Sadler, top three car. Cole Custer, very disappointing. He finished that race 13th. I don't know how he scored that many fantasy points. He started 36. That's why. Yeah, Cole Custer's probably a top eight car, sometimes just a top 10 car. John Hunter Nemechek probably won't be in this race. I don't know. I haven't seen if he is racing this or if Kyle Larson's in it. He's all over the place. I'd put him a top 10 car. Daniel Hemrick, earlier this year, I would have said he was a top 5 driver. I'm going to kind of downgrade that to probably around top 8 car. Michael Lynette's top 15 at best. Johnny Sauter, who is filling in. I don't know if he's going to be in the car for Spencer Gallagher again. If he is, he is running a great He's having a great year in the Camping World Truck Series, and it's carrying over into his Xfinity races. Just jumps in the Dover car and really has no problem adjusting at all. He's a top 10 driver. We always put Gallagher around 15th in that car, which there's a lot of ways to look at that. Spencer Gallagher was not a good truck driver, and he was not a good Xfinity driver, but he's in pretty good equipment, it appears. And that he's probably not a 15th place driver, but he's in a 15th place car. So now you put Johnny Sauter, who is a good driver, in a good car. Top 10s, top 5s, not out of the question. Sauter finished that race 6th. He was in the top 5 for some of that race. Austin Cindric, I don't know. He's getting a top 10 car. And that car is covering up for a lot of his mistakes. Jones, top 10 driver. Gregson's done for the year. Tift, he's top 10er. Truex, top 12. Ross Chastain's a top 15 guy. David Starr, got him some points there. David Starr is a 28th at best. Jamie Clements is top 20 car. At best, we're going to get the cup guys back in. Remember, we talked about the no cup bump. This is a long podcast, man. Why don't you stop talking already? You got to push guys back a little bit. And Clements is going to be a guy that gets pushed back. He's not getting a top 15 now. Top 20 at best. Joey Gase had some really good finishes, but I'm going to push him back to 25th to 20th range. Vinny Miller sucks. BJ McLeod, he's had some pretty good races here, but you're going to want to push him back about 5 more spots. Really shouldn't, because the guys that, but it is, it's just the way it's going to work out, folks. I'm telling you, it's just the way it is. 25th to 30th for old BJ. Chad Fincham, he actually finished a race for once and finished 28th. That's a great, good job, Chad Fincham at Dover. Now you can go back to not finishing races again. Ryan Sieg is a 20th place car. Ray Black Jr., I don't know if we'll see him again. He was in the 8th car. That is the Tommy Joe Martin's car. That is a part of BJ McLeod's team. That is a 25th to 28th place car. I like it every week if we can get a discount. Ryan Reed, 20th place car. Steven Light, 35th place car. Alex LeBay, 20th place car. Josh Balicki, 31st to 32nd place car just because he runs all the laps. Spencer Boyd, 32nd place car right there with Balicki. Sometimes he doesn't run all the laps because he wrecks. Like that wreck he had at Talladega. That was an interesting wreck. Dylan Lupton, I would say he's probably 22nd, 23rd place car. JGL had an interesting week with the Kaz Grala firing. They are tight on money at the moment. Apparently the head of James Whitener, the head of JGL, has got some health issues. That's not good for, obviously it wasn't good for Grala. I can't see that helping out Lupton's team moving forward. And this has already been a very trying year for Dylan Lupton. Brandon Brown was in the 30 car for Mario Gosselin, and that car has been strong. We got Josh Williams in that car sometimes. You got Brandon Brown in that car. The 30 car with Alex LeBay, his teammate, pretty good car this year. It's usually 25th to 30th, though. Garrett Smithley, 25th place car. Come on, it's 25th Lee. And then from there, you know, the numbers don't really change. Like, you can't just decide what these guys are going to finish a week before. Yeah, you can. They pretty much do the same thing every week. You can look at all these races. Those numbers that I ran off the top of my head, why did I do that? Because I can do that, because we go through this every single week. That's exactly where they run in practice, and that's exactly where they run in the race. There's not a lot of change because the cars are separated by a lot in the Cup. In the Cup Series, 1 through 10 is not that hard to predict. And then as you get through the teens to the 20s, it gets kind of tricky. Maybe you've run into this yourself. Like, you got a good idea who the top 10 cars are. And then you get kind of in the middle of the teens to the 20s, and you see, like, well, that guy could easily go here, and that guy could easily drop down to here. And that's because the cars in the teens of the 20s are bunched up. It's almost like a bell curve. The elite cars are completely separated. You know who the top 10 is. But from 15 to 25, really, people can jump all over the place. A guy can be as good as 15th. He can be as good as 25th. We see that with Austin Dillon every week. We see that with Paul Menard jumping up, jumping down. William Byron up and down. Alex Bowman. They are very equal in skill. But more importantly, the cars are the same. There's a bell curve. In the Xfinity Series, it is not a bell curve. It is a flat line, and these cars are very much separated. We know 1 through 10, and then you go into the teens, and we know exactly who are the drivers that can run from 10th to 20th. They really cannot knock the door down and get into the top 10, but they would need a major incident to slide into the 20 through 30s. And then we look at the cars that run from 20 to 30. They will need a lot of brakes to get into the teens, and they will need some really, really bad brakes to slide into the 30s or even slide out of their spot. Like, Jeremy Clements is going to be around 22nd. He's not even going to slide down to 26th unless something really bad happens to him, because the machines are that much different. There isn't very much parity in the Xfinity Series because of money. There is a huge spending difference from 1st to 40th. In the Cup Series, there's much more parity. So it's something you can do in the Xfinity Series. That's it for me. This has been a long podcast. There's no way you're still listening. This is like 3 trips to work probably for some of you. Anyway, thanks for joining me here in the Fantasy NASCAR podcast. Please consider subscribing at fanadvice.com. I know there's a weekly package. You can sign up for $12 to give it a shot once, see if you like it. If you don't like it, go back to the free stuff. I won't judge. I'll never judge. Trips Light's fantastic.